Welcome to a special edition of the Marketplace Roundtable podcast featuring Jay Mintzmyer of Value Investor's Edge. Jay first began contributing to Seeking Alpha in 2011, building up a large following through his work covering shipping stocks, probably about as comprehensively as they're covered anywhere online or in print. Since 2015, Jay has run the Value Investor's Edge Marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. The service offers intensive coverage of deep value opportunities in the shipping, energy, MLP, and industrial sectors. You can subscribe to Value Investor's Edge by going to seekingalpha.com and typing Jay Mintzmyer, that's Mintzmyer, or Value Investor's Edge into the search bar at the top of the site. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Seeking Alpha is a website where authors from around the world share their ideas and analysis on the stock market. The Marketplace is our platform for authors to run investing analysis and idea services so that readers can take their investing to the next level. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. And now your host, Jay Mintzmyer.
Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon if you're joining us from Europe. Welcome to another edition of Value Investor's Edge Live. Today, we're hosting Hugo De Stoop, CEO of Euronav, who will join us to talk about the crude tanker markets, the changes they're seeing as we deal with the global destocking and we turn towards 2021. We'll talk about Euronav's capital allocation plans, what they're going to do with their record $1.2 billion in liquidity. As a reminder, nothing you hear today constitutes official company guidance or investment recommendations of any form. I have no position currently in Euronav. This is being recorded on the morning of 10 November 2020. So keep in mind, if you're listening to this recording at a later date, those disclosures may have changed. Hugo, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning and good afternoon, wherever you are.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think last time we spoke more formally on an event like this, there was definitely a lot more optimism in the crude tanker markets. I think it was in March, maybe leading into April. And of course, now, you know, the floating storage play was very lucrative, right? But it didn't last all that long. And now we're in sort of a destocking stage. Can you talk about that a little bit? Like, how long do you expect this glut to last? Are you seeing any positive signs, or is it going to be kind of a long slog ahead?
Well, I think that everything you said is absolutely right. And I think that's a little bit the nature of the market, that there is volatility, there is seasonality, there is very often uncertainty, simply because we don't control all the events that affect our market. And when it's true on the upside, it's also true on the downside. I think that at this point in time, we are entering the winter, and normally on a seasonal basis, it's supposed to be better rates. But can it be better rates than what we have had in Q1, Q2, and to a certain extent Q3? It's nearly impossible, because we had a record quarterly in the second quarter. The first quarter was already very good. It is the case that there is an oversupply of ships, too many ships, not enough cargoes, and it's really a combination of two elements. The COVID crisis means that the oil consumption has seriously decreased, and you don't need to be a data analyst to understand why. I mean, people are traveling far less. You don't see a lot of planes, certainly above Europe or in the States. The situation is a little bit better in Asia, but obviously on a worldwide basis, the consumption of oil, in fact, the consumption of petroleum product, and therefore the consumption of oil, is much lower than it was pre-COVID levels. So I think we need to see the end of the crisis. And of course, we welcome the news that at least one of the vaccine will be ready at the start of 21. And that will certainly help the world in general to get out of this healthy crisis or health crisis. And we will see how strongly the oil consumption return, and how strong that markets can come back. In the meantime, we have the same or similar number of ships than what we had pre-crisis. Some of those were used as storage. Most of them have returned to the market. I think that the ones that are still performing a contract either at the very end of the contract and therefore have been already fixed for the next voyage or may be extended. So I don't think that we will have many more negative news coming from that end. And of course, the winter means that there should be more cargo being transported or request to be transported in the months to come. But we do not believe at Euronav that this will rebalance the market strongly. So we feel that the only solution is to look at the scrapping, the recycling of the ships. And on that front, there is pretty much good news in the sense that there is a lot of ships that have reached the age where they can be recycled. Steel prices have risen from their bottom, which means that owners who decide to recycle their ships will receive a very nice amount of money. And so it will be very tempting rather than investing further capital into their ships, because those ships will have to pass a survey, which is expensive. And it's going to be even more expensive than it usually is, because they will have to fit or retrofit ballast water treatment system, which on their own cost $1 million to $1.5 million, depending on the system that you want to install. All of that with the prospect of, at the moment, a bad market. So we feel pretty strong about what we have seen in previous cycle, which is a number of ships going to recycling yard and rebalancing the market, and certainly rebalancing the market for when the oil demand is coming back.
Right. Thank you, Hugo. I'm glad you mentioned the scrapping and the demolition, because that was kind of my next follow up on that is, you know, you've had these great slides. And, you know, of course, the fleet picture is clear that not only do we have basically the smallest order book on record, but we also have one of the oldest fleets on record, and a very healthy balance of vessels that are anywhere from 15 to, you know, 22 years old. However, right, we're not going to see any demolition when rates are good, right? So we didn't really see any demolition in 2020. Q4 of this year is probably the first quarter where the rates are clearly bad and the surveys are due. We still have not seen any real demolition yet. When do you think that starts? Do you think it starts as soon as quarter one of next year, or do you think it might still be another 6 months or a year until we see some of that?
Well, let's make sure that everybody understands how this market works. I mean, when you're sending your ship for demolition, and depending on where your place of incorporation is, because there are more limitations for European companies, or certainly European flag vessels, rather, you're not making a public declaration. So very often, you know that the ship has sort of went through a recycling and demolition, I would say after the events, or when it arrives to the place where it will be recycled. So people are tracking that by AES. So let's say that today you take the decision, you probably have another 3 or 4 weeks before you arrive to India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, China, I mean, wherever you decide to recycle your ship. And it's only at that point in time that some people will pick up the AIS signal and then will report it. So I think there is always a delay between the time the decision is taken and the time you see it being reported by the brokers. So to a certain extent, we are hopeful that the ones who are being faced with the decision of whether they invest further capital into their ships or whether they decide to call it an end are or have already taken the decision for the ships that are due to a survey this side of the year. But of course, when you look at those number of candidates and basically what we name a ship, when we name a ship a candidate, we're simply looking at the survey number that it has to pass, so fourth being 17 and a half years of age, fifth means 20 years of age. And when you look at all those ships, there's a pretty healthy number that needs to go. So not all of them will be recycled, of course, but not all of them need to be recycled. And that's very encouraging. So I suppose that the news will start coming maybe towards the end of the year, but certainly in the first part of next year.
Okay, well, we'll hope to see that, because I know, you know, obviously we weren't going to see any scrapping last summer. I mean, it would be crazy to scrap a ship when you could get anywhere from 50,000 to 100,000 on it. Now we're hoping we'll see some of it in the late Q4, early Q1. There has been some interesting transactions done in the market with some 18-year-old, 19-year-old tonnage. I think ADS Crude was able to sell all three of their older ships for further trading. International Seaways, one of your peers that just reported, was able to sell two older VLCCs. I think they're about 18 years old. They were able to sell those for, I think, a storage contract for their, or maybe some further trading as well. Any thoughts on that? Any thoughts on the gap between secondhand values and demolition values?
Yes, definitely. I think that there are sort of two sweet spots for a vessel's age at the moment. And the first one is the one that you just mentioned, which is the older vessels, certainly older than 15 years of age. And we've seen a number of transactions involving those candidates. I think that people, what they have in mind when they're doing that is, first of all, they will either have already a contract for storage, but at this point in time, I doubt that's the case. The majority of the cases is for trading. They believe that the market will rebound next year, that the values are low enough to make an investment decision at this point. But also, they're not fearful of the future of those ships, because within 2, 3, potentially 4 years, you're going to have a number of regulations hitting our market, and certainly creating a two-tier market from the ships that are sort of eco-consuming, so low on consumption and therefore low on emissions, and the older generation, which is very much the ones that we talked about, which are pretty heavy on consumption and therefore pretty heavy on emissions. When you are buying a ship that is 16 or 17 years of age, you do not worry about that, because you know that it will take time for those regulations to come into place. And so even if it's a carbon tax or if it's, even if it's what is being currently discussed at the IMO, in order to meet the IMO 2030 or 2050, chances are you're not going to be affected by that. The other sweet spot is obviously the opposite of what I just mentioned, and those are the eco ships. And so you've seen certainly a handful of eco ships, and an eco ship is anything that is sort of less than 6 years of age, also being exchanged, because on that end, you're looking good and you don't need to be worried about the initial set of regulations, and certainly the regulations that will affect us for the next sort of 10 years. So you have plenty of time to have a decent return on your investment. You have seen very, very little transaction in the middle, and that's probably because of what I said. You're non-eco, and you will still have a ship in your hands that may suffer from those regulations, and so you're worried about residual value risk. So I'm not surprised that we've seen those values for the old ladies, because I think that the vast majority of the market believes that the market will return, and will return strongly because of the very low order book, as early as next year.
Yeah, very interesting. It makes sense what you said about the oldest vessels almost being like kind of a call option, almost kind of a gamble on the market recovering. And of course, the eco ships having some advantages there. I guess my only concern would be that if everybody thinks that the market's going to recover, then we might not see that scrapping we want to see. So there needs to be something that kind of, you know, snaps people up or you know, dashes their hopes temporarily. And maybe we'll see that. We might even see that in Q1, right?
You know, yes, you're right, and you're not the first one to make that remark. I think that's true in every cycle, because the recovery of a down market entirely depends on the number of ships that will be scrapped. And remember, in previous cycles, we had a pretty thick order book, so you needed to have demolition, but it was no guarantee that you will recover. And here it's a little bit the same. You have a thin order book, but you do have an order book. I mean, there's still about 30 ships that needs to be delivered in the next year or so. And at the same time, you need the demand to recover, and therefore you will need to see some ships being scrapped. Now, put yourself in the shoes of a guy who has an old ship, and an old ship. I mean, if you want to you know, only take the 20-year-old, that would be enough. If you only recycle, send to demolition the 20-year-old, there will be enough candidates. What is his prospect? Because even if the market returns, it's probably not going to return to very high levels if he and the others don't scrap. And in the meantime, let's not forget that those guys don't earn the same as what is being reported as the market. So we had a slide in our earnings calls last week, where we showed that the market at 15,000 is probably the equivalent of a market of 9,500 for an old ship. That is only because you consume more, so your time charter equivalent is the freight less what you have consumed. So obviously that's going to dent your return. On top of that, your OPEX will be higher. And as I said, you need to invest in those ships to pass the survey. And there we're talking about, you know, 1 to 1.5 for the ballast water treatment system. And then the regular survey, which is anywhere between 2 and 4 million, depending on the condition of your ship. All of that you need to have a return within the next 2.5 years. And I think people are not very hopeful that within the next sort of 6 to 9 months, potentially a year until next winter, the market is going to be rewarding you. So it's pretty difficult, in my opinion, to take a position where you say, okay, I'm going to invest that huge amount of money. I mean, we're talking about millions of dollars. In the meantime, I'm going to continue to lose money on a cash basis because the market is below OPEX for those guys specifically, as I just explained. And when will I see the end of the bleeding? I'm not quite sure, because if everybody thinks like me, it's not going to work. And the flip side of it is also that if you don't recycle, you may also be punished by those regulations that we just talked about 2 years down the road. So it seems that this time should be easier to take the decision than at any other time previously.
Yeah, we certainly hope so. And that slide was definitely instructive. We've copied it over into our post, and I'll make sure I include that slide later. Of course, with the bunker fuels coming down, the gap between the older ships and newer ships is not as much as we thought it would be last year. But as you noted in your slide, it's still significant. We're still talking $5,000, $6,000 per day. So it definitely makes a difference.
And thank you very much for pointing out this, because you said the bunkers is not very expensive, but it's still $300 and it's going up. The news of vaccine meant or send the oil 7 or 8% up. Everybody knows that the oil is likely to gain traction, and therefore petroleum product, including fuel oil as well. So I think that the $300, which is what we put on the slide, could easily become $400, $450. And from that point of view, it's denting further your returns.
Exactly. And I think that's one thing that gets missed. I think most of the folks today probably know this, but I think it gets missed in the broader market, is that a rising oil price or a rising bunker fuel cost, even though it impacts, right, it's an expense that you have to pay, that would actually probably be a big benefit for Euronav because of your eco tankers and because of your more modern fleet. It definitely would hurt the owners of the oldest tonnage. Let's shift to Euronav a little bit. You have $1.2 billion in liquidity. The balance sheet is pristine, probably the best it's ever been. You did a lot of returns to shareholders this year. You did a lot of repurchases, a very healthy dividend. Even with those very generous returns, your balance sheet is in great shape. So what's next? What are sort of the objectives here? Is there any sort of growth opportunities to acquire any tanker tonnage? Are we going to be looking into more repurchases? What are sort of the priorities at this point?
I would dare to say a little bit more of the same, because we are quite clear in our return to shareholders. So when we make money, we return 80%, and we do that via dividends and share buyback. And I think we did both so far this year and same previous year. So we have pretty good track record. We have ample liquidity. When you look at the liquidity, I think that you should look at it in two ways. The first one is to make sure that we never have a problem, even in dire straits, in difficult markets. That's obviously not the majority of our liquidity. And then there is the other part of the liquidity, which enables us to act very fast when we see an opportunity. And I think that there too, we have a good track record. Speed is very often of the essence in shipping. So when you see an opportunity, you need to grab it. I think that values are getting to a very interesting levels. I mean, think about it. For a modern vessel, you would pay $107 million in January. Today, for exactly the same vessel, you're probably paying only $85 million. So it's a significant discount from the peak. It's still a little bit above the bottom that we may have seen in other cycles. But you know what? I think that when you are too greedy, then you may miss those opportunities and reaching the bottom is always a difficult exercise. So you can count on us that when we see a good opportunity, we will engage and try to transform it into a deal and a transaction, which will augment the size of the platform. We are one of those people that believe that the economies of scale exist in shipping. I think that when you see the challenges that we have in front of us, we better have large platforms to be able to deal with them better. And I would say even the same as some people call it peak oil, which may have happened because of this COVID crisis. We don't really have an opinion on that. And guess what? We don't really need to have an opinion on that because we're quite excited on both sides of the mountain. If we have reached a decline, I think that the market will further consolidate. And it should be no surprise that the incumbent large players will be the consolidator of the small players. And from there on, the return should be even better than what they were in the past. So, I think that in a nutshell, whenever we have good earnings, we'll continue to distribute. When we don't have earnings, which is likely to be the case in Q4, we have a minimum dividend so that people can be patient, that we'll distribute. I think that share buyback are normally coming from earnings, but if you look at last year, we did above and beyond just 80% of the earnings. So you cannot completely exclude that from our cards. And definitely on the expansion, we will try to be opportunistic as we have tried to be in other cycles, and it's at the bottom when the values are affected by the earnings that we like to be active.
Certainly. And you've done a fantastic job with share repurchases over the last year. And I think you mentioned in a panel earlier this year, you compared the prospect of share repurchases to the cost of going out and buying a VLCC in the open market. And I don't remember your exact comparison, but I think this was back when tanker rates were a little stronger. And you said, you know, you can either buy a VLCC in the market, a modern one for $100 million, or I can buy back shares and it's almost like buying VLCCs for $70 million, or you said something like that. Is that sort of a similar calculus that you're going to continue to use, kind of comparing shares to ships, or how do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, thank you so much for that question, because it's very important for people to understand that we are not buying back our shares because there is a discount to NAV. We're buying back our shares because when we translate the share price into the equivalent of a modern VLCC, we reach prices that are below historical bottom values. So I think it's fair to say that around 80 million, maybe 79, you are at the bottom, and that is the equivalent of roughly speaking $9. When you are below $9, that means that you are below historical bottom values for VLCC, and so what you just explained applies. Now, it is also fair to say that we have a large platform. We have 76 ships. We have sold a few older ones earlier this year, late last year, 3 VLCCs this year, 4 Suezmax. We are certainly looking at selling a few more older vintage. And so we need to do fleet rejuvenation. So I think that one share buyback does not exclude the other, which is acquiring modern tonnage. We need to keep the size, and to a certain extent, we are looking at building the company further. So we will not always say, okay, the share price is better than what we can buy in the market, therefore we don't buy anything, because for the long-term future of the company, it wouldn't be good. But again, one doesn't exclude the other, and the beauty of it is that we have the flexibility to do both. So we have done quite a bit this year. We can probably do further, but if we see opportunities, we can probably act on them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the focus on a kind of per share return and a per share value is quite superior to. I think a lot of your peers, unfortunately, sometimes lose the vision, right? That per share metrics matter, and you can both add new ships to the tonnage and you can renew your fleet, but you can also be very accretive with your capital by repurchasing shares when you compare the two choices. You mentioned some of the older ships in your fleet, and that's a good kind of segue here because, you know, looking at those, they're mostly Suezmaxes. And then you have the two those two vintage ULCCs, right? And I think one of them was on a storage contract and one of them you were using for a fuel hedge. Can you first of all update us on those ULCCs? Are there any plans with those? And then secondly, how do we think about the Suezmaxes? If you sell a few of those, are you going to probably buy new Suezmaxes, or are you kind of agnostic? You might buy VLCCs.
Start with the easy one, the ULCC. So the ULCC were built with a life fatigue of 40 years. So you cannot really compare them to a VLCC where the life fatigue is usually 25 years. Depending on where you trade them, at 20 years they become already a bit fragile, or you need to invest quite a bit of money into your survey to keep them afloat. So the ULCC, they have a much longer life, and so you cannot really compare them to VLCCs. At the moment, you are correct. So one was on a storage contract for 6 months and was extended for another 6 months. The ship will be exactly in the same position for the same client. I'm very happy about it. It was extended at the same rate. The other one is the one that we have used for our own needs in terms of fuel hedge. So you will remember that we purchased 400,000 tons of LSFO, the compliant fuel, as we were having a new regulations at the beginning of this year. It worked very well as the stock of fuel was much cheaper at the beginning of the regulation until the COVID crisis hit. And then, of course, it sent the oil price and the petroleum products to the bottom. We stopped using that fuel for a while until we saw the recovery. We were buying from the market, in the open market. And now we have started to consume it again. From a mark-to-market perspective, we went from minus 55 million to minus 9 million nowadays. We reported in the Q3 earnings that it was minus 15, but obviously the market has moved further up. So we continue to use that ship. And in fact, what we have discovered is that we could create quite a bit of value by buying the fuel in bulk. So normally a VLCC would buy 2,000 tons at a time. We buy 40,000 tons. We store it on board that ship, which is parked in Malaysia, very near Singapore. So pretty much 70% of our vessels will come across that sort of pump station twice a year. And so we refuel our fleet with a product that we could buy at a discount because it was bought in big volume. So we are likely to continue to do that, because that has created a value for us. So that deals with the two ULCCs. On the Suezmax front, well, we have sold the oldest ones already this year. We don't have a fixed policy, but we like selling ships when they are 15 years and over and probably ahead of their 17 and a half year survey. We'll probably continue to do that. But if the values are very depressed, then we are probably also going to wait for better times. Those ships, all of those Suezmax, were built by ourselves, so it was not purchased as secondhand. They were built with very high specification, maintained with high specification, and we can continue to trade them relatively well into many types of market because of our network of clients. So we will definitely continue to try to rejuvenate the fleet. When we're selling Suezmax, are we likely to buy Suezmax? It really depends on the opportunities that we see in the market. What we did this quarter was to charter for 2 years, option one, two modern vessels. We didn't want to go and order vessels, but we wanted to replace the old ladies that we had sold by something modern. And we thought that the time charter market for Suezmax had reached the bottom. And so we took those opportunities. So we are a little bit agnostic about sort of Suezmax or VLCC. It's very opportunistic. And we are, to a certain extent, agnostic about buying or time chartering in. It has to be the best opportunity at the time when we are out in the market.
Yeah, certainly makes sense. And I'm sure the calculus changes on a quarterly basis, depending on what the prices are and where the market's at. Thank you as well for the color on the ULCCs. It'll be good to see once that fuel hedge is wound down, you know, what you're able to do with that second asset. Let's pivot a little bit to the FSO joint venture, because that was very exciting news that came out last week. And we hosted International Seaways here yesterday, and we talked about the FSO a lot. So yeah, if we could just kind of see that from your perspective. My understanding is the EBITDA was about $36 million per partner per year up until 2022. And now with the extension, it's about 20, maybe 21 million EBITDA. Is that kind of the numbers you have on your side as well?
Yes. You know, there's a confidentiality clause, so we cannot really talk about those rates, but what we have sent in press release was approved by our client, and you know, it doesn't take a lot of effort to make the calculation that you have done. You know the OPEX because they are published in our annual report, and so you have received the revenue line, you divide that by 10 years, and you get pretty much the numbers that you mentioned. So yes, absolutely. What is very interesting is that it's a 10-year extension starting in 22. So the ship will generate revenues until 2032. And I think it's fair to say, and without interruption, because we don't need to invest any capex, the ships don't need to go to dry dock given their utilization. And we've been uptime 100% since the beginning of the contract 10 years ago, and we very much hope that we will be uptime for the rest of their life, and that's because of redundancy systems that we have on board. So very happy, but also happy that the ship will be debt-free in 22, and that opens really a number of opportunities, either a financing to be put on them. We could potentially look at a sale. You know, we haven't discussed at the joint venture level what is the most opportune way of extracting value, but you can certainly count on us to do the homework and to try to find ways to extract as much value as we can for our shareholders. And that could be also just enjoying the free cash flow, because the rest of the business is usually exposed to the spot market, which is very volatile. So everything needs to be explored and compared, and then we will see how we deal with them.
Yeah, certainly makes sense. You mentioned the debt is drawn down by 2022. I believe there's around $50 million per partner left on that. Is there an opportunity to refinance, say, you know, next quarter, next year, or do you need to wait until 22 and that debt is repaid?
No, I think you can refinance today if you want to refinance today. I mean, that's not a problem. There are no restrictions. I think that rushing into a refinancing would be advisable only if you know what to do with the proceeds. So you need a project, and quite frankly, these kind of financing with such a stable income is relatively easy. So you may identify a project. You may even get a bridge financing if you absolutely need to extract money from those units in order to pay for that project. Believe me, it's not the financing that will stop you.
Certainly. And with $1.2 billion in liquidity, you're not exactly hurting for cash. So it makes sense you're not pushing that one. You know, your book value on an FSO, it's extremely conservative. Are you planning on doing sort of a accounting addition? Now that there's a new charter on there, will that book value change at all, or is that going to still stay where it is?
No, I don't think that's necessary. You know, book values are book values. I'm not even sure that many people look at book values. I mean, maybe in some of the sectors is more telling than in our sector. The book values of these units could be very stable, and indeed, by the end of the contract, we will have depreciated completely the assets, and to a certain extent much more, because we have extended the life of those assets by transforming them, the life being 25 years instead of 20 years for a regular tanker. But either you recognize that when you sell the unit, or you recognize that at the end of the contract, or throughout the P&L once the ship has been fully amortized. On top of that, and just to add a little bit more spice or complexity to it, it is a joint venture. The book value at the joint venture level is different. The book value at the INSW level is different. We all had our own way to calculate for those book values. So that's not really comparable. But I don't think that Euronav, we are looking at inflate book values because we want a contract. I think if the ship has no book value, that's all the better for the P&L.
Yeah, certainly makes sense. No depreciation hits. And yeah, it doesn't really matter to most folks. I just know that there's been a case in the last couple of years where analysts may or may not have been giving, you know, very much credit to these joint ventures. And there's a lot of attention paid, I think incorrectly, to book value as opposed to, you know, sort of like a discounted free cash flow. So just something to think
fully,
about.
Fully agree. And it's very funny because for the rest of the business, they look at the asset values. As they say that the free cash flows are not stable enough, and once you give them very stable cash flow, they still say, yeah, but what about asset value? So I'm not sure we're gonna win this one.
You just can't win. Been a very good call today, Hugo. I really appreciate it. One kind of closing line of questions for you. If you were going to buy assets in today's market, where do you see the most attractiveness? Is it some sort of like resale, some sort of like new build? Is it, you know, 5-year tonnage? Is it 10-year tonnage? Where do you see the best opportunity to buy?
Well, I think for a company like Euronav, it continues to be resale of modern tonnage, and resale or ships on the water, of course, but modern, so sort of 5-6 years old max. As I said, I think that for other players, there are opportunities to do much older. I think that there's a little bit of a bigger question mark for in between. New building price are attractive today, but the problem is that are you going to buy a conventional ship, conventional meaning that the propulsion system is still being fueled by LSFO, when everybody is talking about emissions? People are talking about dual fuel, LNG, VLCCs. Very few have been ordered, to my knowledge, only two. There's still a lot of questions around those technologies. And one of the main questions is that the right ship for the future? I think that we need to be a little bit more patient at Euronav before deciding on what is the technology of the future and potentially returning to the shipyards. At this point in time, I think that everybody should refrain from going to the shipyards because we are in an oversupply situation. It may get resolved by eliminating or recycling a few ships, but we certainly do not need to inflate the order book. And I hope that no one will make that mistake, and we certainly won't make that mistake. Again, if it was a new technology which doesn't exist in the market today, then obviously we would be forced to return to the shipyards. But I don't think that's the case, certainly this side of the year or even next year. I mean, to be seen how fast those technologies develop and how fast the market decides what technology is a sort of future-proof technology.
Yeah, it's a rapidly changing landscape, and if there are attractive resales available, there's really no reason to add to the order book. You're just hurting everybody, and you're actually probably paying more money, right, in the end of it. So, interesting. Last question: you have $1.2 billion in liquidity. How much of that liquidity is sort of like necessary cushion that you want to keep regardless, and how much of that is like pure dry powder, like you could actually spend all of it and still be fine?
I think 400 million is what we call the 2-year runway for a very bad market, sort of 15,000. I think that the other end of it, you may see the liquidity being eroded if we were to enter very low values territories, because let's not forget that the big chunk of our liquidity is parked into revolving credit facilities, those being secured by assets, by vessels, And so the value of those assets will have an impact on the available liquidity. So I don't want to put a number there, but the 1.2, if we are in a market where ships are at rock bottom values, is probably not the full amount that we can draw down. Anything in between can be called opportunistic.
Certainly makes sense, Hugo. I think the number to remember is that 400 million is kind of that cushion that you like to have, and that's a very conservative, you know, accounting and very conservative positioning. But we would expect nothing less from Euronav. Hugo, thanks again for your time and joining us today.
Thank you very much, Jim. Thank you. Thank you all.
This concludes another iteration of Value Investor's Edge Live. As a reminder, we hosted CEO Hugo De Stoop of Euronav. Nothing you heard today constitutes official company guidance or investment recommendations of any form. This was recorded on the morning of 10 November 2020 at about 9 a.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening to this recording at a later date, please keep in mind disclosures may have changed.
If you've been enjoying the Seeking Alpha Marketplace Roundtable podcast, you can subscribe through iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher. You can also give reviews on those platforms to help other investors discover this podcast. Jay Mintzmyer runs the Value Investor's Edge Marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. You can subscribe to Value Investor's Edge by going to seekingalpha.com and typing Jay Mintzmyer, that's Mintzmyer, or Value Investor's Edge into the search bar at the top of the site, or by going to seekingalpha.com/marketplace and looking for Value Investor's Edge there.